Ready?
I was born ready.
I can honestly say that's the best news I've heard all day.
Joe Torti Show.
Kind of reminded me of a dark, gothic Neil Diamond.
That's like exactly what I'm going for.
This is the Joe Torti Show.
What show are you listening to?
Joe Torti Show.
I'm trying to be patient, but you're making it incredibly difficult.
I can say big loud things. I can be too much for Tim.
Can we just end this already?
Now it's time. The Joe Torti Show.
Yes, it is. What's going on, Philadelphia? Joe Torti here with you. 97.5 The Fanatic. We're hanging out together until 10 o'clock today. Tyler Zuli is my producer this evening. Hanging out together for the next 4 hours. Got a lot to get to today. We are doing some NFL draft what-ifs. Something that we were evaluating and looking at because Joe Banner mentioned that some in the Eagles room wanted Akili Smith with the number 2 selection. What are some of the other great what-ifs of drafts? We're going to look into that as well. We've got more good stuff, of course, as our NFL draft coverage continues. Grace Rayner of The Athletic tonight will join us at 8 o'clock to share her expertise on the players from Clemson and who the potential fits could be for the Eagles and where the best fits might be all around and what those players can bring to the table. And we'll also talk about what the Eagles' draft plans might be with respect to trade up, trade down, all that other kind of stuff. And that leads us to the opening point and something that I want to I wanted to share and I wanted to get out of the way at the top here, which is to say that after I tweeted out yesterday about how I've been told about the Eagles and their interest in CeeDee Lamb and pursuing a trade up and things like that, I got a mess of tweets talking about how I am a bad reporter, an inexperienced reporter, an unsourced reporter, all this other kind of stuff. And I want to clear something up right away from me to you, my voice coming out straight to your ears. I am not a good reporter, a bad reporter, a mediocre reporter, I am not a reporter at all. Not even a little bit. I leave the reporting work, you know, to people who are actually reporters. You know, like Sal Palantonio and Adam Schefter and Adam Kaplan and Jeff Mosher. You know, people who are insiders, who are developing sources and asking questions and working story angles and verifying and doing all of this other kind of stuff. I am not a reporter. I have no interest in becoming a reporter. And this is not what this whole thing was all about. What this is all about is that I, like you, am interested in what's going on with the Philadelphia Eagles. And when you're in my position, sometimes you hear things, and there are things that are of varying degrees of understanding and varying degrees of likelihood, let's say. However, I like to think that we're friends here. And as your friend, when I hear something that I think is of particular value from someone whom I trust to know what they're talking about, I always feel like more information is better than less information. So I hear something, I pass it to you, it is out there, so now you know everything that I know. So that is what this whole thing is all about. To call myself a reporter or a would-be reporter or anything like that is a true insult to anyone who has ground their teeth and worked and tried to develop a profession as a reporter or an insider or something like that. And that is absolutely 100% certainly not me. But when somebody comes to me with information and I hear it and it's from someone that I trust, and this scenario seems plausible to me, in the interest of us having a conversation, us having a discussion, and me sharing what could be a monumentally impactful moment in Eagles draft history, I'm not going to sit on it. I'm going to share it with you. I'm not going to sit back, and if it does happen, then I'll say, oh, I had this way back when. And if it doesn't happen, I'd say, oh, well, you know, whatever. I just want to share with you what I have, period. End of story, end of discussion. So you can stop asking for sources. Stop calling me a great reporter, torty bombs. You can stop telling me that I'm a bad reporter. I'm not any kind of reporter. I heard a thing. I thought you should know. And now you know. It opens up an entirely new question, by the way, in that if you've been listening to this program, and Tyler Zuli, who's producing tonight, has literally had no choice. I mean, assuming that he pays attention, which, you know, he gets paid to be here. So I'm assuming that, you know, some attention is paid at least.
I would say no.
Okay, maybe not. If you've been listening to the program, you'd know that not only am I not really all that interested in a trade up, I'm not super interested in a trade back either. I think the 21 is kind of like a sweet money zone in this draft. I think that there's going to be some good stuff there. One final thing. I've been, people have called me out for airing what the Eagles' draft plans might be. Like, as if I'm revealing some big secret. Howie Roseman was not involved in DeAndre Hopkins to fruition, to Robbie Anderson, to Breshad Perriman, to DeMarcus Robinson, to pretty much any wide receiver of note that could possibly throw people off the scent that the Eagles are in the market for a wide receiver. I'm not blowing up the Eagles' spot. Howie did that himself by completely telegraphing what's going to happen in this draft, or what the plan would be for the Eagles in this draft. And then, of course, you know, the information CD Lamb is the preferred target and that Howie's in love with CD Lamb. The trade up, what they're trying to do. It's clear that, you know, this information suggests that the Eagles feel somewhat painted back into a corner. But we'll see. Would that trade up be worth it? I'm actually not interested in that. Because I don't know, and I really do like CD Lamb a lot as a prospect. I don't know how much more I like CD Lamb than a guy like Justin Jefferson. I really like Justin Jefferson, especially considering the value that it would cost in the event that CD Lamb is slipping to, you know, 9 or 12 or whatever the trade up target would eventually be, versus moving up a handful of spots and thinking that Justin Jefferson could be a selection instead of at, you know, 12, you trade up to 18 or you trade up to 17 or something like that. That's what I would, if I am the Eagles and I am dead set on making that happen, I am locked into trading up for a wide receiver, I am not sure that the superhero move is the way to go. The big swing for CD Lamb, I am not sure that that's the way to go. However, we have seen in the past, Howie Roseman's not necessarily worried about not taking the home run swing. It was a big move up for Wentz. We saw the smaller move for Andre Dillard, a couple of spots. It seems like everything's kind of been in the repertoire in the past for Howie Roseman, so it's not that we can rule anything out. There are two scenarios that I've identified here. One, that would merit a trade-up. The first one is if everybody slides. Tyler, I think we're probably in agreement that this is extremely unlikely, that there are these, like a run on quarterbacks. I'm talking about like four in the top eight that would naturally push some of the talented wide receivers closer to where the Eagles might be able to stomach a trade up if it meant that you'd have your choice of four or your choice of the three, right? I feel like this is less likely. Tyler, you're Mr. Jordan Love. Do you anticipate that Jordan Love would be a top eight or top 10 selection?
I don't anticipate Jordan Love being a top 8 or 10 selection, but I will say this. I anticipate Jordan Love or Justin Herbert being a top 8, top 10 selection. I don't think it's both, but I would almost guarantee it's one of the other.
So I'm convinced that there's at least three going. Burrow, Tua, and I think that it's Herbert.
I do too.
I'm just saying that Cam Newton draft was insane. It was one of the first drafts that I was covering. I'm looking around everywhere at Radio City Music Hall as Jake Locker gets announced as the 8th pick. I said, really? Jake Locker? And everybody's like, oh, wow, that's kind of surprising for Tennessee, but okay, whatever. Then a couple of picks later, Blaine Gabbert goes, and Christian Ponder. It was like, this is...
Sam might have had a better career. Yeah, I mean, Sam all Ponder. Things considered, they were yeah.
Yeah, you're right. All hell broke loose, right? The whole thing was just like, how could this many quarterbacks be going this high in this quarterback class, right? I don't know how highly a team values a guy like Jordan Love, but that's one scenario for a trade-up, is that if people are sliding back down to where they shouldn't be sliding, and the Eagles might have their choice of wide receivers. The other thing is if everyone goes, and I think that this is way more likely of an outcome, especially if you believe that Henry Ruggs will be selected very high. A wide receiver run in the early going could merit the Eagles trading up in the event that they don't want to get stuck with, yeah, and I say that, stuck with, not saying that I would say this is a problem, but if the Eagles are perceiving that there is a gap between the top four and everyone else, get stuck with Denzel Mims or LaVisca Chenault's injury history scares you off or whatever. If you have to have one of Judy, Lamb, Jefferson, or Ruggs, then a trade-up scenario could come about right there. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. You can reach out on Twitter as well, at Joe Torti, at 97.5 The Fanatic, and at Tyler Zuli, who is in a full-on lather over LaVisca Chenault.
I'm in a rage right now. Talk about my boy. Put some respect on his name.
Is he a top five receiver?
No.
When all of this is done, when we're looking back at this draft.
Draft-wise or production-wise? Like, will he be a top five?
No. Career-wise, will he have a top five career in this draft class?
I would like to believe so. Assuming the injuries hold up, I believe so. I think the top three are, you're going to get two of the top three, and then I think you're going to get three guys that are not within that, what I think people are referring to as that elite core. And I'm in total agreement with you on Michael Pittman.
Mm-hmm.
I love him, and I love Chenault too. And then there's one, whether it be Jefferson, whether it be Mims, whether it be Rager, I think one of those guys are also going to be the fifth one.
Now, here's my concern, and I have to admit that this didn't carry a whole lot of water with me before. So I apologize if you've brought this up to me and it didn't hit on me, but I've had time to stew and I've had time to percolate on it. The depth of the wide receiving class is not an indicator to me that the Eagles should not take a first-round wide receiver. And here's why. I am not confident whatsoever in this regime's ability to evaluate wide receiver talent based on the way that the board is breaking, whatever that means, or who's available. I just don't know. I don't know if instead of Donnell Pumphrey, if players were available, if they would have taken Connor, or if they would have taken Kamara, or if they would have, I don't know. I'd like to think so, because it's clear, you know, that Kareem Hunt and some of these other guys were better players. But I don't know. So as much as I like guys like Rager and Pittman and Mims and Chenault, and I would say that there's probably a list that's 10 deep that I like at wide receiver this year, my concern is that the Eagles end up with the Donnell Pumphrey of this loaded draft class. I do not want that to happen even a little bit. So despite the fact that there's good value to be had at 21, and I would anticipate that if the Eagles stay at 21 and did not trade up, that they would have very good selections to make right there. And that they would get a baller, somebody who would make their team better. There is something to be said for having your choice of almost everyone and picking the one that you want. For Tyler, in this case, let's talk about CeeDee Lamb. Let's pretend, sure, as he should be, that Jerry Jeudy's a top five draft selection, right? Let's pretend that. Certainly a top six draft selection. If the Eagles were to trade up after a couple of non-receivers go, say to what I heard as a potential target, the Las Vegas Raiders selection at 12, and you can have your choice of CeeDee Lamb, Henry Ruggs, or Justin Jefferson, I probably feel a little bit better, even if they take Jefferson instead of Lamb or instead of Ruggs, because they weren't forced into it. The only one off the board was Jeudy. They could have had anyone, and they still took that one.
So, and I would tend to agree with you, because I think that the biggest factor that a lot of people seem to miss when it comes to draft day is talent evaluation within the organization, within the front office. Everyone except for Chip Kelly has a board, and boards exist, right? And if you get your guy at where you've got to get him, that's fine. And I think that I would tend to agree with you. If you have your choice of three, and even if Jefferson is your guy and you go and take him, that means you have confidence in your selection.
Yes.
I am just worried more so about the mortgaging of the future for that one selection, whether it's Lamb or Jeudy or Ruggs, whomever.
Whoever it is. Right. The value of trading up versus the actual. And it is two completely different conversations, right? Because you could look at what the Atlanta Falcons did in their massive trade up from 27 to get Julio Jones. And you could say they got Julio Jones. That's what counts. Does it? I mean, you look, that's one of our what ifs that we'll get into in a little while, but you look at what else they could have had, who they could have ended up with. If they would have ended up with everything and made the exact same selections, they would have hung in there as well, even without Julio Jones, from a value perspective, from the numbers of the players and stuff. What I am digging at with respect to the players themselves is that it would be easy for us to say, look, you know what? The Eagles are trading back. They're standing pat. They're not taking a wide receiver. They know it's a deep class. And all of a sudden, look who's falling right into their lap. Look at Jalen Reagor falling right into their lap. Look at Laviska Shenault right into their lap. Michael Pittman right into their lap. But the flip side of that is, I want you to make a selection because that's the guy that you wanted, not because Donnell Pumphrey was the guy who's left in a really good class. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. You can reach out on Twitter as well, at Joe Torti, at 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zuli's at Tyler Zuli. I would be opposed to a trade-up if the Eagles got absolutely fleeced. And I think it just depends on what your definition of fleeced is. Let's once again examine the player that I've heard that the Eagles are enamored with, CeeDee Lamb. If the Eagles consider CeeDee Lamb to be their gem, their whole draft is a success if they get CeeDee Lamb, right? I don't think what Pittsburgh gave up to get Devin Bush for a similar move to the Denver Broncos is a drastic overpay, right? Which is to say that year's one, they swap ones. Denver picks up the two, which I know is a big thing. People are saying that I don't want to get rid of 53 at all. I understand. And then a future third. Is that too high of a price? Because to me, that is the framework of a deal like that. There's a quarterback tax. Anytime that you're trading, whether it's back into the first round or way up, there's a tax when it is clear that you are trading for a quarterback. There always is. But the question is, would that be good value in the event that they considered CeeDee Lamb to be their home run. Your draft is a success if you get this guy player. And I have to admit, despite not liking the trade-up idea, that I can swallow that at least if it was a guy that you could not leave the draft without.
I think that's probably pretty fair. And to me, when I talk about the mortgage the future type deal, 53 is going to hurt because I think you can get a lot of talent in 53. I think there's a lot of really good safeties that are going to go in that 53 range that are going to help you a lot. I also think there's probably a couple of interior linemen that might be able to help you a lot at 53. But if it's 21-53 and next year's third, you have to make that move. When I talk about mortgaging the future, I mean you cannot give up next year's first.
Right.
That's unacceptable. Next year's second, I could be swung on, and if that's what it costs to get CeeDee Lamb, then I'm probably in. Next year's third, don't blink.
Right. Now, next year's one, in my opinion, that is to get from 53 to like 28, because there's like somebody else that you want. You're talking about other picks that you can make if you're trying to get two first-round picks.
To get back into the first round.
To get back in. Sure. That's a different conversation entirely. I mean, I'm 100% with you. When you've got to get guys who are under team control, salary controlled, fifth year, that sort of thing, you have to have as many first round picks as you can possibly have. So giving up one in a wide receiver class that's like this, even if you love CeeDee Lamb that much, seems irresponsible.
Well, and my curiosity peaks. You talk about that salary and getting the fifth year.
Yes.
The only thing that I would defer on is, I know you lose the fifth year, but the price tag between pick 32 and pick 33 is a pretty substantial one.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, not having that first round value is huge. I would almost think that if you're feeling like you're going to 31 or 32, just go to 33. You know, if you're going from 53 at that point.
Unless you're battling with those
Chiefs. Right.
Right. Or the 49ers in whatever case. It's going to be a fascinating time running up to this draft. Obviously, rumors are swirling. Smoke screens are all over the place. So this is what ends up being, you know, silly season, as people put it. We're going to work our way through here. 610-632-0975 is your phone number. We do have a couple of open phone lines. Grab those while you can here. And we're going to lead off with Greg. Greg, I've run you into a break here, so I'm going to give you your full time on the other side. It is the Joe Torti Show. We're together until 10 o'clock. And, of course, we will hear from Grace Rayner of The Athletic regarding Clemson draft prospects, maybe T. Higgins, maybe a couple of other people as we head up until 10 o'clock. That'll be at 8 o'clock that we hear from Grace. It is the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic, hanging out until 10 o'clock. Want to remind you, of course, the 6 o'clock hour is brought to you by Family and Company Jewelers. Visit them on Route 70 in Marlton, New Jersey, or at familyjewelers.com, South Jersey's diamond destination. Let's go right to the phones with Greg and Upper Darby to lead things off on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's going on, Greg?
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
All right. Listen, got a couple of points. I've been arguing online because I hadn't had anything to do, and I've been arguing with people. I'm a big fan on Justin Jefferson.
Me too.
And this is the reason why. Because we've drafted so many times the big fish in a small pond. Well, he's a big fish in a big pond, you know?
Yeah.
And his numbers have accelerated every year, right? And he had some dog to him. Now, the big knock on him is he can only play the slot. He can play the outside, but let's just say if that was true, that he could only play the slot. You have Alshon coming back. You have D-Jax on the other side, right, in a perfect world. Who's playing the slot at that point? Justin Jefferson. Is Justin Jefferson better than Greg Ward and J.J. Whiteside? Absolutely.
Yes.
So I think that I think that he's perfect for him. I think he's perfect for us.
So the one thing that people would say, Greg, and I don't subscribe to this because I'm with you. I like Jefferson a lot. That Ja'Marr Chase was like the ace wide receiver on that team, and so all of the attention that Chase was garnering allowed Jefferson to get all that separation and stuff like that.
His numbers, 1,158 yards. I mean, you just can't not watch him on a national stage. I watched him before, and in the one game I saw CeeDee Lamb, I cannot remember the game, but he sort of like disappeared. But if you look at his highlights, he's amazing. But hell, if you look at Sheldon Gibson highlight, he's amazing too. So that doesn't mean anything.
Sure.
You know? But I just think, you know, with the pedigree, I think if I'm a GM, if I had to choose from a guy from the SEC, right, or the Pac-12, it's all day long. It's like, you know, some mistake that the guy that played for the Redskins last year came out of nowhere, and he was the
McLaurin.
He's Ohio State. Like, what did you expect? I mean, come on, like, that's surprising. Like, after a while, just to be monotonous. Like, come on, it's the reason why they were in this program. Reason why they got a scholarship because they were good enough.
Right. You know? And that's what always, Greg, thanks for the phone call, man. That's why DeAndre Hopkins took people by surprise and never took me by surprise. Because, you know, you watch Clemson, you're like, oh, Clemson's awesome at football, and this guy's their best wide receiver. Like, why would we not think that DeAndre Hopkins is going to be an impact player at the next level? By the way, the game that CeeDee Lamb effectively, you know, kind of got shut down in was the TCU game, where he had two catches for 16 yards and a touchdown, and one carry for 21 yards. He said, actually, that he was asked about which corners were the toughest to face and which guys gave him the most trouble. Who did he think were the best? And he said Jeff Gladney from TCU was the best guy that he faced. And obviously those numbers kind of bear it out that CeeDee Lamb wasn't really able to get away from Gladney. You know, press corner, elite athleticism, good size at 5'10", 191, like, yeah, good enough to make it happen. It makes sense. However, I don't anticipate that happens to Lamb a lot. And to the point about Jefferson, I don't know enough. I didn't watch every single LSU game, but I watched enough LSU to have an opinion about Jefferson, and I don't know what small fish stuff there is. He looked like a big fish to me. He looked like he could be a featured wide receiver, and I can't punish him just because LSU is good at recruiting football. Like, I just can't do it. Or their warp speed offense or whatever. You know what that means? There's a lot of opportunities for drops. There's a lot of opportunities for turnovers. We saw it with Chip Kelly. Was speed the best thing on the planet? Clearly not. You've got to have execution and the ability to have those drives pay off, and Jefferson played a massive role in that. I like him a lot. By draft time, I'm going to talk myself into Jefferson over Ruggs.
A lot of opportunities, by the way, too, for penalties. And if you've got a receiver that's causing penalties, turning drives backwards and making first and 10s, first and 15s, or first and 20s,
mm-hmm.
Not going to see the field. So the fact that he caused very few penalties, at LSU when they're moving like that, the fact that CeeDee Lamb caused very few penalties when they were moving at Oklahoma like that, I've got nothing but good things to say.
Yep, absolutely. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Do you think that there is a big difference if this information is correct? Do you think the Eagles are right in saying that there is a sizable gap between the top four wide receivers and, say, the next three wide receivers? You want to include Higgins and Mims and Rieger, whoever else.
So, assuming that four is Jefferson, correct?
Yes.
Yes, the answer is yes. I do believe so. I am more under the impression, I play a little bit differently with it, where for me, it's Group A is two players. Group A is Lamb and Judy.
That's how I feel.
I guess if you want to say they're called them group one, then group one and a half is Jefferson and Ruggs.
Okay.
And then group two is the rest of them. It's Mims, Rager, Chenault, as much as I love Chenault, I'll tell people that until this draft happens.
Yep.
But they're group two.
Higgins in group two? Or
yeah,
is he in group three?
He's in group two. He's the back end of group two.
Okay. All right. We'll have to, by the time the draft rolls around, you are working draft night, you know, from 6 to 9, right? So we'll have to put together our objective
big
prospect
board.
Rankings lists. Got the big board, got the positional rankings. So that way we can go back and check and be like, Aaron Curry, what were you doing, dude? Oh, he modeled his game after Lawrence Taylor? That's awesome. That worked out really, really well, you know? So we got to make sure that happens.
In a Lawrence Taylor league where you were, you know, allowed to hurt people. You can't do that anymore.
No. No, that unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your perspective on old school football, that is that's not the case. Also, I wanted to get into this as well as we continue our NFL draft discussion. Grace Rayner will join us at 8 o'clock to discuss the Clemson draft prospects, including T. Higgins. And Isaiah, I am super excited to talk to her about Isaiah Simmons. That's probably the player that I'm most excited to talk to Grace about. But lots of draft prospects there. Speaking of draft/pro prospects, Jalen Green, who is number one on the ESPN 100, is the first, he might be the first period, but I think that he's at least the first big-time elite athlete to take the G League offer of, you know, not being the standard G League, you know, rookie free agent, but being instead the, you know, right out of high school, $500,000 one-year training program situation. He's going to go ahead and do that. He said, it's going to be a lot of pressure. At the same time, I think I'll handle it well. I've been handling the attention since the ninth grade, so I'm pretty used to it. Hopefully everything goes right so players can take this route in the future. He's choosing the G League over college. Will be working in a developmental kind of capacity there ahead of the NBA draft next year. And I have to say, this is a fantastic idea because I would say that this is one step closer to being the one and done type thing going out the window. I can't speak for everybody. One of the things is when you look at the one and done thing, I don't think that it has worked for anyone. I don't think that it has been good for college basketball. It certainly hasn't been great for the prospects. And it hasn't gotten all that much better for NBA teams because the bust rate, if you look at the statistics, the bust rate has been about the same as it was when kids were coming out of high school. Yeah, you don't have like the Kwame Browns of the world that are, you know, the biggest draft busts that you could ever possibly see, but you got Anthony Bennett. I feel like the high profile busts, you know, might be out the window because, like, oh, you missed on this kid from high school, blah, blah, blah. The good teams are still drafting well. The bad teams are still drafting poorly. I am excited for anything that would usher the end of the one-and-done era. Isaiah Todd taking this route as well, possibly being the trailblazers for this, and I think it's fantastic. A lot of people think that it is fantastic from the player's perspective, obviously being compensated, getting to train with professional coaches and stuff like that. That's all well and good. As someone who absolutely loves college basketball, I am excited for this too. I think that this is going to be really good for college basketball. You're going to get guys who are there who are focused on, you know, building programs. You're going to have guys there who are going to commit for at least a couple of years, perhaps, unless they unexpectedly explode after their freshman year. I think that it is good all around. If you're a fan of college basketball, if you're a fan of pro basketball, if you're a fan of people being paid for something that they do at an extremely high level, getting rid of the one and done is a great plan. And I believe that this G League route is kind of like one step towards making this happen. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Reach out on Twitter at Joe Torti at 97.5 The Fanatic. We got a lot on the table. Would you do a trade up for the right player? CeeDee Lamb, as I knock the microphone into next week. CeeDee Lamb, if it's Jerry Jeudy, Ruggs, Jefferson, someone else. I mean, we've been very focused on the top four wide receivers in the draft. Should we have been? Obviously, it's a big position of need, but considering how deep the wide receiver draft is Ty Lue's dream of an inside linebacker dead? Should it be? I don't know. Not the team's needs are. 610-632-0975. Somebody said that they heard that I eat uncooked pasta.
Where could, some kind of crazy person?
I would have to be to eat uncooked pasta, but where in the... What? It's completely fabricated.
People are coming at you from all different angles.
I don't mind. I mean, like, it goes with the territory. There's a lot of people who are appreciative of any kind of news or any kind of update during this time, but some of the shots are coming from strange avenues, like eating uncooked pasta. I'm not there. Can't do it.
Your favorite flavor of seltzer is plain.
Oh, jeez. Your favorite color Starburst is yellow. It's like, dude.
What are we?
Come on, man.
Are we? Hold on. Are we talking poorly on the yellow Starburst?
Oh, Jesus. Help me.
Are we talking poorly on the yellow Starburst?
Help me, Lord. Get through this.
You've got 3 hours and 20 minutes to explain yourself.
I bet you like the orange one too.
No, they're the worst one.
All right. So we've established what that common ground is. Now it's everything else in the possible Starburst wrapper versus the yellow. That's what we've
got. I've got my definitive order.
All right, we'll get to that. 610-632-0975. There's Tyler's order and then the correct order. It is the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti Show, welcome back. 97.5 The Fanatic. Yeah, so let's get into some of this this what-if stuff with respect to the NFL draft as well. Coming up in the program, we've got Grace Rayner at 8 o'clock talking Clemson football prospects. We've got, of course, the information that the Eagles are interested in a trade-up for CeeDee Lamb. Could be a smokescreen, could be real, but... You know, it wouldn't be a huge stretch to suggest that the Eagles are interested in wide receiver desperately, considering the fact they've done, nothing to address the position in the entire offseason. So that's a possibility. When the what-if draft scenario came up, it came to us from Joe Banner, who was having a conversation on the Eagle Eye podcast. This was on Tuesday, where he was talking about Donovan McNabb being a non-consensus pick. This was at number three. So here's what he said. There were a few of us on Donovan, but Akili Smith was probably the next highest guy. We had people who felt very strongly about Akili. We didn't have Couch as a top prospect. We had Donovan first when we finished the board, but we had three that we projected as quality NFL starters: Donovan, Culpepper, and Akili Smith. We were a little worried about some character stuff with Akili Smith, not overly, but just a little bit more than the other guys. And then, ironically, John Gruden coached Donovan at the Senior Bowl and was very close with Andy, and Andy trusted him, and he was very strong in his recommendation of Donovan. Andy felt strongly about it. He was the offensive mind of the team. He was a guy who had to base his real career and success as a head coach on the initial years on that, which is to say with McNabb. And that cleared the way for us taking Donovan. And really, Donovan's the only one whose career you would feel really good about if you picked him in the top 5 or 7 picks. Man, could they have ended up, if they took Achilles Smith instead of Donovan McNabb? I mean, we've talked about Achilles Smith, you know, being a bust, and we talked about Donovan McNabb being a Hall of Fame potential quarterback. But Achilles Smith lasted 4 years in the league, had a 46.6% completion percentage, 5 touchdowns, and 13 interceptions for his career. Over 5 years, or 4 years, 2,212 yards. That is an awful, awful single season now for a quarterback to have. But that was the whole thing. The returns, by the way, not encouraging for your yellow starburst so far.
Yeah, it looks bad.
In the early going. The argument is, what should the 4 main starburst flavors is superior? Early on in the voting, pink has 195, almost 200 votes now. Pink's gotten 100 votes. Red is in second place at 34.9. Orange is at 10.3. Orange is terrible.
Orange is so garbage, it's not even funny.
It's a really bad starburst.
Like, I will be okay if you give me any other starburst at number 1, as long as you have orange at number 4.
Yellow is at 4.7%. So it still has the potential to catch orange. But literally, like, I put the yellows and the oranges back in the starburst wrapper, wrap it up, and then pass it to some poor, unsuspecting person. Be like, hey, you want some starburst? Because everybody does. Everybody wants some starburst. But I'm long gone by the time you realize they're all yellows and oranges. For good reason. I'm going to pass them to you now, though.
Bring the yellows my way.
Yeah, the oranges can stay away.
We just, like, put them in a pile and light them on fire.
Okay, perfect.
There's probably enough chemicals in them.
Let's go to Lenny in Berlin next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Lenny.
Hello, Joe?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
You had that guy from Clemson on.
Grace Rayner. She's a writer for The Athletic at 8. Yes.
Yeah, I think she's going to have a lot of good things to say about that cornerback, A.J. Terrell. I think he's the best corner in the draft.
What do you like about him relative to some of these other guys like Okuda and like C.J. Henderson?
Well, he ran, I think, a 4.440, and he looks like a good tackler. C.J. Henderson, he doesn't look like a he reminds me of Asante Samuel. He's afraid to tackle. Sidney Jones. He avoids being a tackler. This guy, A.J. Terrell, I would take a 21 and then get a wide receiver in the second round. So you have 2 bookend cornerbacks.
That's an interesting idea. And that would kind of go into, Lenny, what we were talking about. Like, how deep is this this draft and how deep is it at wide receiver? Do you need to spend a premier pick on a wide receiver when, you know, like you said, the next group of corners, not necessarily the best?
Joe, I think the top 3 wide receivers are overrated, in my opinion.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I really do. If you put like a Julio Jones in this draft, he'll be way, way above these 3 guys everybody's talking about.
You think that he'd be way, way above a guy like Jerry Jeudy?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well,
they had other wide receivers. I mean, you're talking about they had that guy Ruggs and a couple young guys. I forget their names.
Yeah.
They were opening up the
Devontae Smith, yep.
Yeah, he reminds me of a Calvin Ridley who went like 28 to Atlanta.
Wow.
That's who he reminds me. I think the top 3 are overrated, Joe.
That means Lenny, that means that somebody's going to be really disappointed because that guy screams a top 10 pick.
Who?
Jeudy, he's screaming a top 10 pick, so somebody's going to be really disappointed if they take him in the top 10 and he's Calvin Ridley.
No, he reminds me of a Calvin Ridley type.
Yeah.
But when you have that lady on from Clemson,
yes,
push her on A.J. Terrell because I think he's going to be a great corner, shut down corner.
Yeah, Lenny, thanks, man. I'll definitely talk to her about A.J. Terrell. He is – well, at Clemson, that's kind of a thing, is that they have to be willing to step up and tackle, when you look at all, I'm not saying that all of these guys have ended up being great, because not all of them obviously have. But when you look at the recent history Clemson corners in the NFL, they're all tackling. Trayvon Mullen tackles. Cordry Tankersley tackles. Mackenzie Alexander tackles. Not all those guys are great corners. I would say that exactly zero of those guys are great corners, but they do tackle. So A.J. Terrell would not have gotten recruited to Clemson unless he's willing to step up and run support. I don't know how important that is to the Eagles, though. You know, it's been a good thing that Jalen Mills has done it, right? But they kept Ronald Darby around forever. And that dude could not have been less interested in tackling anybody.
I think it's more so important to the Eagles fans than it is to the Eagles.
Yeah.
We have sat through, I mean, even some of the good corners, some of the great corners. Asante Samuel was a great corner.
Yes.
Couldn't tackle a lick.
Nope. Or not interested. Whatever.
Right. Like, whatever way. It might be. Couldn't do it. I think Shelton Brown could tackle.
Yes.
I think Lito was okay at it.
Willing.
Yeah, at least willing to. But since those guys, even with the big time guys like Samuel, none of them seemed like they could tackle. And wrapping up has been such a huge issue for Eagles secondary, especially at the cornerback position, for so long.
See, I haven't seen enough of Henderson not being willing to tackle. I think that Henderson's probably the best cover corner in the draft in terms of blanketing guys. And that's what I've seen. Like, that's what I've been paying attention to. I haven't seen enough of him, you know, either stepping up and tackling or kind of like shirking away from run support. I got to look at that. Got to take a look.
I'm probably pretty biased when it comes to the cornerback position.
Yeah.
Just because I watch more Big Ten football than I watch anything else.
Yes.
Okuda stands out to me.
He's a really good player.
Stands out to me a lot.
He should be the first.
I like Henderson a lot. I do. But if you're giving me an option between the two, it's got to be Okuda.
You think he's a better cover guy than Henderson?
Because I
think he's definitely the most complete.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you're going to, it depends on what kind of system you're going to put him in. If it is strictly one-on-one, man-to-man, I might go CJ Henderson. If you're playing with help over the top, if you're playing in some kind of zone scheme, I would go to Okuda. But if you are playing that strict press coverage, maybe Henderson could be your guy.
Okay. All right. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. It's Tyler Zuli. He's producing. We're hanging out until 10 o'clock. This is the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.